Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
It is day 104,200,525,000.
I saw this thing on Twitter. It was Bernadette singing Time Heals Everything, and it was just the sequence where she's like, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, and then she's like, August. My son, my wife, heard it, and she doesn't know the song. She started laughing so hard because she thought it was written just for the quarantine. But it's true. I don't know what day. I don't know what month it is. Is it September? Is it spring? Who knows, Rob?
Frogs have so much spring within them. That's a little
jump frog jump.
That's a little Bill Frin after our little Bill Frin tirade.
Yes,
from last session. We're just dovetailing it into
just,
this
just
session.
Circling back, if you will.
Yes. Just circling back. I hope you all found a recording of I Have Found and listened to its beauty. If you've not, stop what you're doing.
And you found the placement. It's in the front part of the mask. If you're using singing terms, you just want to really lift the soft palate and just let the air flow.
Oh.
Because man, that last note, I in college, Rob, not to recapitulate, but my God, we'd listen to that over and over and over again.
Carolee?
Big. Oh God, yeah. That was the only recording that existed. Are
oh,
you
that's
kidding
right.
me? There's no more. But like, I was in college though, because it was 2003. So anyway. But yeah, on my big stereo. Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
What an exciting life for all of us, show queens, you know, out there. What have you been doing to fill the time in the quarantine? In a quarantine?
Oh, other than parenting, my sweet little 10-month-old is grown his little teeth, his top teeth. And tonight I was telling Rob before we went on air, he cried in a way I've never heard before in my entire life, and it just about broke my heart. But I'm happy to report that in the morning we listen to show tunes, we listen to WQXR, which is our local classical station in New York City. Crawford just loves the music, so it makes me super happy. But this is not a favorite thing, but please tell me, do you know, so there's a video that's going around on the Insta and the Facebook, and I feel like all of our lives are dictated by these videos that are funny, that bring us joy. He's a gentleman who actually did a concert for me last year when I do my yearly benefit for Abington Theater Company. His name's Aaron Kubrick. He's a character actor, really funny guy, really, really special guy. He's done tons of shows. On Instagram, it's Aaron, AaronKab. Just look at the squirrel video.
He's taking a video
of a squirrel going in a circle, falling off of a feeder.
Bird feeder.
But he goes so fast. But he picked songs and timed it out so as the squirrel is spinning and loses his momentum, he flies off right at the end of like the button of, you know,
I'm flying.
Flying, or the mom, you know, the Rose's Turn, or insert every single other. There were four. It's a 4-minute long video. I saw it by myself at 11 o'clock at night, and I was on the floor. I could not stop laughing. It was making me laugh. And it's the same video. It's not like it's a different squirrel every time, but you know what's going to happen. And yet somehow the timing of it and the way the squirrel's whipping
it's kind
it
of funny.
I don't know.
That squirrel
it, Rob.
Is talented. That squirrel was talented. That squirrel was also in Paramore a couple of seasons ago.
I
did some of the Cirque du Soleil tricks.
I knew that you were going to say that.
That squirrel.
I'm going to be like, that squirrel was stuck in Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark.
Oh, no. I went
almost
for Paramore.
Every other. Okay. But yeah, no, that was a good one.
I actually had a moment a couple of days ago where I was like, did Paramore actually happen? Was that a real show or did I dream?
They got a cast recording.
They got a cast recording out of it.
Yeah, they opened really early in the season.
Why don't we get a cast recording? How come we should
do a
show and get a cast recording?
Let's go play 54. It's open. No one's playing it right now. Let's go.
Everyone, put on your gloves and masks. We're gonna go in.
Yeah,
we're gonna do our act for everybody.
Done. Like,
have you been watching?
What do you want to hear?
We take requests. I've told you what I wanted to hear. I've told you for 3 weeks I want to hear Why Can't I Walk Away from Maggie Flynn.
I made a list. People reached out to me and people were like, Kevin, you need to do... Yeah. So I've got a list. I got a list. I'm not going to share.
Do we have to Venmo you? Is that what you're waiting for? What's your Venmo name?
So I got like a joke going with my buddy because I'm like, you were going to say, am I watching anything? Rob, nobody can watch everything because there's so much content online. It is a saturated market right now. At 8 o'clock on a Friday night, good luck. There's 10 things. There's 10 different Broadway stars that you're going to want to watch. Are you going to watch them? No. Can't watch them all. I got my iPad going. I got my phone going. I got my computer going. I've got earbuds going in every other ear. I don't have enough ears to listen to it all, Rob. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I've got one just like the dialogue's going so I can at least read it.
This is oversaturation. You need to take it. You need to calm down. You need to shut off everything.
I will put my Venmo link in the bio. I did see a drag queen pull off 3 wigs in one sequence, and that was pretty awesome. And I almost thought about tipping, but I listen.
You have to tip the drag queens.
Listen, Effie, we all got pain, and I don't have any money, so there's my
pain. Wait a minute. You got to tip a drag queen, even if it's a dollar. That's poor form. And she took off. She took off how many wigs? 3?
It was sexy. It was but it wasn't like one. It was like one, bam, ba. So it wasn't like Sasha Velour who like did her like, you know, the famous with the roses coming out. It was like, ga, ga, ga. It was like 3 in a row, bam. And it was really cool.
You got to tip $3, a dollar a wig.
You have to.
A dollar a wig. If she did what do they call them, cooter slams? If she threw herself
No.
Oh, then that's $2.
Save that.
That's $2 tip.
Oh, okay. All right.
If they call you Hanny, that's a quarter. I know. That's one of my
all
big
all the
things.
Drag queen watching that you do. Yeah.
Well, I just got a call from Steve Mnuchin. He's asked me to come in and talk to the Treasury about how to pay the stimulus packages to the drag queens. That's not. I am blending both the conservative agenda and the liberal agenda, and I'm trying to help both people. We're going to do trickle down economics, Hanny. That's what it's called.
And you just made a little money, so that's good.
And we all made a little bit money. Did you get your stimulus package?
No, we're still waiting.
I got mine.
Really?
Yep. Spent it at Footlight Records. Because
I got the CDR X of Maryland. I also got the CDR. Forever Frank. I've also got the
Forever Frank. I was like, I could pay off my student loans, or I could buy a bootleg of Halloween by Mitch Lee and Joe Darian. And I was like, well,
I and Albert Charles Strauss.
Fuck that. We don't need that. We can go to Charles apartment. We can go to Charles apartment and say, play us I and Albert. And he's like, here you go.
Like the weirdest, like. Strangers. They always, but he's got all of the like all of the CDRs are there. Like,
folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, please go over to Footlight.
Footlight Records. How he's getting away with it still? I just love it.
We've interviewed him, Bruce Yeko, who has.
We were there. We saw the storage.
And Bruce has like all of these amazing cast recordings from like. Are you looking for the Tel Aviv production of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
It's in the kitchen. Got to go in the kitchen.
You have to go into his kitchen. It's on.
I'm joking, but I'm not.
You're not joking. That's the thing. So tell us what.
Salad days. You got to go. It's in the back guest bedroom. Second shelf from the top. Salad days.
Move.
Third box on the left.
Move the Mylanta to get a copy of Tova Feldsha in Brainchild. So it's called Brainchild. So this is, I'm sorry, folks. This might be a little too niche, but trust us. Go to Footlight Records. So he has all the most rare, obscure things, and he sells them. But a lot of it is bootleg. So I don't know if this is legal. That's my big question. I don't know if this is legal.
There's an asterisk.
And I hate to send you to someone where my big question is, I don't know if this is legal. But God damn it, it's worth it.
It's there. And it's if you're hungry for that rare show that you never heard of, He's got it. And if you want a video of it, he's got videos. There's video.
Wow.
Video DVDs as well.
Oh, yeah. Now he's sending video DVDs. Yeah.
And you know, I will say this. I want to give a shout out, though, to his blog. He actually has a really cool blog on Footlight. There's a blog there. And he takes every year. So he takes, like, he started in, like, I think, 1960. Now he's up to 1981. And, like, every month he puts out 1981, every single cast album of that year, talks about it, gives you links in their catalog to, like, so 1981, Bring Back Birdie, talks about Bring Back Birdie, you know, and all in the obscure ones too, because of course, when you
the Mooney Shapiro songbook,
you instantly think obscura. That is instantly, yes, exactly.
Right? That would be one. Right? That's what, the utter glory of Morrissey Hall, like those, right? Right? That am I right?
Exactly. Exactly. Oh. Do you have a favorite thing?
Besides Jimmy Stewart?
Yes.
I do have a favorite thing. Yes, I do, Kevin. I'm so happy you asked, because I am the first to admit when I am wrong or that I have actually judged something too harshly. And sometimes you need to be reapproached with something again and see it in, with new eyes. And I realized I used to crap all over this. And then I watched it again and I thought to myself, you know, Rob, it's not as bad as you thought it was. So, yes.
I love that. I love that.
So, folks, my favorite thing this week is the 1974 movie musical MAME. Starring...
I just watched it.
Did you watch it?
Because it was on TCM, because they played it on the, it was on the app for about, they released the movie for like a week, and then that's, you get like a little bit of
time. Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. So, sorry. No. What are you apologizing for?
Amazing. Wow.
So folks, here's the deal.
It's weird.
Okay. Look,
I posted on my Instagram, the Statue of Liberty, when they're like parachuting down to the Statue of Liberty and sitting on top of it.
It is, there are bizarre choices in this movie. However, here's how this all got started. So a good friend of mine and ours who listens to the podcast was like, I've never seen the MAME movie. I'm like, well, great. Let's, you know, we'll watch it together. We'll see what we can do. So we watched it together. And as I was getting ready for it to load, I'm like, it's the worst movie ever made. And Rex Reed said, like, they put chicken fat over the lens every time Lucy was on screen because it's just that bad. And I was getting so ready to just sit there and consistently make fun of it. And I don't know what happened. I found myself laughing at her in a good way. I found myself genuinely, like, wiping tears away. In the MAME number when young Patrick runs up to her. And I was like, wait a minute, this movie, yes, it's not Angela Lansbury in MAME. And yes, there's odd choices about it. But I actually found the movie to be incredibly moving. So I would hope that if you saw MAME, okay, get all the snarkiness out of the way now, go back and revisit it. Just go back and revisit it with an open mind. It's not as bad as I think people were remembering it, or maybe I'm getting more sentimental. And if you need a little refresher, MAME, the musical, is based on the book Anti-MAME, which, now this turnaround was so fast. The book comes out in 1955. Lawrence and Lee make it a play starring Roz Russell in 1956. 1958, the film comes out. The film is literally the fucking stage version, because they actually do, like, blackouts. If you remember in the Rosalind Russell movie, she'll, like, she has, like, a line, and she'll be, like, spitting distance. And then she, like, pauses while the lights, like, iris in on her, they would on stage. Yeah. And then they black out, and you're like, oh, okay, so that's how you're going to do it. Cool. Then in 1966, we have the great musical with Angela Lansbury, B. Arthur, Jane Connell, directed by Gene Sachs. And they decide that they're going to make it in the movie in the 1970s. And in 1972, it's going to be George Cukor directing it, who directed My Fair Lady and, like, tons of other great movies. And Lucille Ball is going to star in it. Why not Angela Lansbury? Because she wasn't a big enough star at the time. Remember, this is before Murder, She Wrote. This is before her nephews killed every single person in Cabot Cove.
Her nomination for Oscar was, like, 1944, or, like, Gaslight, or whatever it was.
Exactly.
I mean,
she had no credibility in the film industry, so you understand why Warner Brothers passed her over. She was not happy about it, but they passed her over. Mm. So it went to Lucille Ball. So Lucille Ball was getting all ready to do this, and she broke her leg, and they had to postpone filming. And so at that time, George Cukor was like, bye, I got to go. I got to go do other things. He left, and they replaced him with Gene Sachs, who directed it originally on Broadway. And Gene Sexton done a couple of films. He done Barefoot in the Park. He done The Odd Couple, The Cactus Flower, all wonderful films, but not a musical. And it just, the movie just has like some tonal issues. Like you can't figure out like, what is this supposed to be exactly?
What world are they in? What world are they in? Like I joked about, like there's that sequence is she's going to teach him how to live and they parachute onto the Statue of Liberty.
Well, you're right. Like in the latter half of the movie, it's got like this very heavy realism. Like when she goes to visit the conservative parents, it feels like a realistic movie. But before that, like you said, they're hanging off the fucking Statue of Liberty. You know, and you're like,
That's a clown show. I mean,
it's clowny, to quote Lucy from her heyday. And of course, everybody knows that. I mean, maybe you know this, maybe you don't know it. It's the movie was supposed to star Madeline Kahn as Agnes Gooch. And after the first day of filming, Lucille Ball said, "I want her fired." And there's some discrepancy as to why she was fired. One is that Lucille Ball felt she's never going to be able to, she was too sexy to be Agnes Gooch. That she could pull off the sexy part, but she couldn't pull off the frumpy part. The other one, there's another one. Lucy was getting getting upstaged by Madeline Kahn and was like, she's getting more laughs than I am. Get rid of her. I don't really see that. I can't picture Lucy doing that. And the third one was that Madeline Kahn was giving a really bad performance. And Lucy was like, she's not working. We have to fire. And then Madeline Kahn was giving the bad performance on purpose because she wanted to go do Blazing Saddles, but they wouldn't let her out of her contract. So they're like, if you fire me, I can go take other work. And so who knows what the story is. Either way, I'm happy it kind of worked out because Jane Cannell, who played the role originally on Broadway, gets to do it in the film and is absolutely fabulous. But it's an odd movie, but if you just let all the baggage go, I find it to be very, very touching. I thought I was doing a little bit of research on this and I thought this was so fascinating. First of all, do you know why Lucy wanted to make Maine? Now, you have to remember, film buffs, this is the early 1970s. This is the era of, like, The Godfather and The French Connection. We're seeing, like, Midnight Cowboy. So she was
gritty,
like... Gritty. Yeah. And she's like, films need to be family-friendly. And so they were like, well, can you give us some examples of films that aren't family-friendly? And she goes, I'm doing this because I'm sick and tired of seeing things like French Connection, Last Tango in Paris, Last Picture Show, and The Exorcist. But then I was like, maybe she was pissed because they never offered her roles in any of those movies.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I would love to have seen her in Last Tango in Paris, where she makes out with Marlon Brando and they have sex with butter, which was the big highlight of that movie.
Lucy, bend over. I'm going to stick a Land O'Lakes inside you.
Stop it.
Oh, Marlon. Oh, it's buttery.
You should just cast her in all of the Oscar winners that you're watching every single you know, day.
So Lucy, in this scene, when you catch the villain, you're going to jump over the trash can and then you're going to tackle him. You got that? What if I jump in the trash can and there's a banana peel and I slip and I fall and then I roll around and Ginger Rogers comes out and we Charleston? Lucy said after this, she goes, I was so disappointed by the reaction, because the reaction, I have to tell you.
Oh, it was mean. Right?
I'm going to read one quote to you. I'm going to read one quote to you, if I may. So this was a review. He pointed out that Ball would have made a perfect Mame had she played the role 15 years earlier. This is from the New Republic. He described her as, quote, ready for this, too old, too stringy in the legs, too basso in the voice, and too creaky in the joints.
I thought it sounds like a Broadway World message board to me. I thought I was at all of that chat for a second, and it was Broadway Baby 606111 was
Chromaloom 47 said Lucy's legs were stringy. And I agree.
They are. Have you ever seen them up close? They're totally stringy. They're tote stringy.
Leon Cholgosh 93 says, dear old Shiz disagrees, but he doesn't know.
I will say he
liked American Psycho. So, Mame cost $12 million and only made back $6.5 million. Not so good for you over there at Warner Brothers. Gene Sachs eventually had a great career again, not doing film as a stage director. He did most of Neil Simon shows in the 70s and 80s. And Lucy never made another film again. She was so mortified by the experience, she never went on film again.
Really?
She did a TV movie called Stone Pillow, which is a bizarre movie. But if you want a little extra Mame bonus, at the same time she was doing her TV show, Here's Lucy, and in one episode called Lucy Meets Lucille Ball, Lucille Ball is doing a press junket for Mame, and in order to like increase popularity in Mame, she's doing a Lucille Ball lookalike contest. So Lucy Carter goes and applies for the lookalike, and you see Lucille Ball like promoting Mame in a split screen with Lucille Carter. Weird. Very bizarre stuff. So anyway, folks, go back, take a look at Mame again, keep an open mind. I'm hoping that maybe that they'll, you know, do a revival of Mame at some point, because it has not been revived yet.
Ever.
There was a talk in the early 90s after Bette Midler's Gypsy of doing a TV version of it. And they looked at, first it was Streisand, then Midler, then Cher, then Whoopi Goldberg. They were all attached to it at various points. Just never came to fruition. Wow. I would love to see it today. If they were going to make a film of it, I would love to see either Nicole Kidman or Cate Blanchett do it.
Oh, wow. That would be nice.
Yeah. I think either one of them would be fabulous and fun. I would be so happy to see either one of them do it. And if they did it on Broadway today, I'm trying to think who would be a good...
Toni Collette. I want Toni Collette.
Toni Collette. And if Brian Stokes Mitchell doesn't play Beauregard Jackson Pickett Burnside, then I'm not going to come see the show. Sorry,
bye,
folks. That's if him or nobody.
And who's playing Burnside Gooch? Is it like Leslie Margarita? It'll be
Leslie Margarita. Or you know who would be really funny? Ann Harada. Ann Harada.
Yes, Ann would be actually.
Can we get Ann Harada in this thing? Okay. And I directed by Jerry Zaks, I'd be the happiest man on the face of the earth. So that's it. Mine is Mame 1974. Please give it another try. You can disagree with me all you want. I found it to be very, very touching. You can do that with a double feature and then watch Lucille Ball in The Exorcist. There's only one thing that's going to get this demon out of her is if she sings a duet with Ethel Merman. And Ethel Merman.
Russell Knipe is right here.
Russell Knipe comes in.
Yes, totally.
Where's Ruth Buzzy to play the sister? Yeah, so anyway, that's my favorite thing, folks.
That's
and
a good
I,
one. That's a really I, good one. I'm glad you're bringing us back to it.
I was wrong.
And you know, I think it is pretty cool that Gene Sachs, you know, the original Broadway, I'm trying to think of other movies that were directed by the stage director.
Very rare.
No,
very rare.
It does not happen.
Very rare.
Because those worlds, especially in that era, they did not, unless you were a famous Hollywood type that then went to Broadway, but you were not considered real if you were like a Broadway type.
No.
And the movie industry was not like, no. Not
and also, when they did do it, it really wasn't that successful. I mean, think of like if you've ever had to watch Hal Prince's A Little Night Music movie, which I'm sorry, people might love it.
The one and only movie he ever directed.
It's so bad. Well, he did one other one.
One other thing. Yeah.
I can't remember what the hell it was called. Like something. I forget. Something wrong with everybody or some shit
was
like that.
Definitely.
But that Little Night Music one is bad. And Bob Fosse did Charity. Right?
Oh, I forgot it. Well, yes, that's right. Yes.
But then Hal Prince wasn't allowed to do Cabaret.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Norman Jewison did Fiddler. Did you hear this story? This story came up yesterday. So Josh Mostel, who was Zero Mostel's son, was in the Jesus Christ Superstar movie. And Norman Jewison was directing, who directed Fiddler, had directed Jesus, was directing Jesus Christ Superstar. And he called Josh Mostel and he's like, hey, I'd like for you to be in Jesus Christ Superstar. And he told that to his dad, Zero Mostel. And Zero Mostel said, tell him to ask Topol, son. Bitter to the end. Bitter to the end. Thank What's you. Your favorite Thank thing?
You. So I'm going to take this also back a couple of decades. Mine's an original cast recording. The show was never done, so I'm not going to make it this show because I honestly don't think.
Wait, that did you say was never done or is never done?
It's never done. I mean, okay. You're never going to. Not even Summerstock. You're not going to see this show. I would be shocked if anyone's doing this show in this other than as a museum piece. However, the score I think has some very deep merit because of the songwriting and because of the history that's involved. So this is I'm taking you back to 1944. And this is
we're going
this is
back. Genuine,
yeah, this is genuinely a score I really love by a composer I really love. I will before I'm going to take us like our first year, Rob, when we would have each other guess because it's somewhat obscure. Although the show ran for 650 performances, so a good
holy boy, shit, this was that's a healthy years. Run.
Yeah, no, it's in that time period a very healthy run. So this is 1944. This is October of 1944. So this is a good year and change after Oklahoma had opened. So Oklahoma had sort of and as you guys know. As far as the integrated musical, meaning like music, dance, all the elements fit together. And in Oklahoma, history books say, really changed that. And it did. Agnes DeMille being a major part of that because of her, you know, Laurie Makes Up Her Mind ballet at the end of Act One. So this is a musical that had a Civil War ballet by Agnes DeMille in the end of Act Two.
Bloomer Girl.
That is most definitely correct, my friend. Well done. So this is Bloomer Girl, 1944. This is a musical by Harold Arlen and E.Y. Harburg, who, you know, you guys know that they wrote, I mean, of course, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. But I mean, Harold Arlen has long been one of my most favorite writers of this period because, you know, if Oscar Hammerstein and Richard Rodgers wrote the first sort of integrated, you know, really everything is put together to forward the story. Harold Arlen was doing that in with his harmonies and with his music. He was not surfing up the typical Tin Pan Alley song of his of his decade. You know, the songwriters were all writing very sort of fundamental harmony, very very simple, sweet, fun songs. Harold Arlen, on the other hand, is a lot of jazz influence, a lot of blues influence. He wrote St. Louis Woman. He wrote House of Flowers. There's so many great shows, especially for the African-American voice that he wrote for in this time period. Okay, so this show, Bloomer Girl, as I said, this had a choreography by one Agnes DeMille. So audiences were already very excited to see this because of the Civil War ballet. It was starring the star of Oklahoma, Ado Annie, Celeste Holm. It was also starring another favorite of Oklahoma, a favorite so much so that she did not have a character name, but what she did in the show became her character name, The Girl Who Falls Down.
The Girl Who Falls Down.
Joni McCracken, who was also married to Bob Fosse, that some say helped make him give him his start. That was a light that opened doors for him. But Joni McCracken was, and she was a favorite thing years ago, and she's just beyond special. Also, Dooley Wilson is in this, who was in Casablanca. He played Sam.
Played again, Sam.
David Brooks, who was the original Tommy in Brigadoon, he played love interest. But this score, you guys, this is the reason why the show is it's a Civil War show. It's based on a sort of a true story. It's a feminist show. I mean, it's a woman who is a daughter who comes from a family, a father who makes hoop skirts. This is pre-Civil War. The Civil War is just about to happen, and this is a daughter who says, "No, I don't want these Civil War. I don't want these hoop skirts. I'm going to wear bloomers instead." And so she was a rebel, and she was fighting against the norm and going her own way. And then that's exactly why we have bloomers, or not anymore. I mean, I wear them sometimes on the weekends, but
oh my God.
but that's the change that happened was because of that. There's some amazing songs in this show. One of my favorite songs is the love song the David Brooks sings. Now you have to put on your I would call them rose-colored 1940s goggles, because when you listen to these, I tell my students this as well. Like, when you listen to these recordings, you have to understand the original Broadway cast recording, on paper, was only invented a year earlier. And when I say a Broadway cast recording, I mean to record something from the Broadway recording and then to sell it to make money and to promote the show. This was new, right? So to hear all of these performers and to hear the original cast in the orchestrations. But guys, it's a little dated. It's the way the sound, you know, but get through that and really listen to these melodies and these harmonies. And the songs are just so delicious. You know, Good Enough for Mom, Grandma is the opening song. The Eagle and Me is the one that
that's a great one. That's a great one.
Fantastic song. Right as Rain is a beautiful song. But you honestly, you cannot go wrong with a Harold Arlen score. And I fear that Bloomer Girl, because it's not, I call them museum pieces because, like, yeah, you can't.
But it is.
You have to update it. You have to update it in some way. You cannot produce it and thinking, oh, this holds up. I'm sure the book is a little suspect, and I'm sure that, but the music is truly beautiful. It is at the dawn of American musical theater because writers like Harold Arlen, who couldn't wait to have more, and this is an opinion now, but couldn't wait to really challenge the way that they write music for the character and for the story, and to let them to really pull their bag of tricks. And with Harold Arlen, he had this blues and jazz that he could infuse into this, and this is a southern type musical that he could infuse into that. So anyway, all that is to say, go listen to Bloomer Girl, check it out, have fun. It's a really it's a more tuneful score than you remember it being.
And I, first of all, a couple of things, because I'm so happy you brought this show up. Bloomer Girl, Encores had done Bloomer Girl at some point. So I know that they had done it maybe 20 years ago, mm-hmm. I think. They had also recorded a version of it that was on television.
That's correct, yes.
That I think there's only a few clips of it from YouTube, but
it's on YouTube, yes.
I don't want to excite you. I would have to look for it. I think I have that kinescope. I think I have that kinescope of Bloomer Girl.
I didn't know that you knew it. So that's amazing, Rob. Wow.
That's it was one of the shows we were talking about for our theater company. And so I had done some research. But also going back to Harold Arlen for a second, I was just looking up his song list. Can I just list some of the songs that he contributed?
Please.
Accentuate the Positive, Come Rain or Come Shine, Stormy Weather, Let's Fall in Love, The Man That Got Away, Blues in the Night, I've Got the World on a String, That Old Black Magic, Jesus Christ, Get Happy, It's Only a Paper Moon, Over the Rainbow, and of course, One for My Baby, One for the Road. Come on. Come on.
And I cannot stress enough, you know, musically, when you think of, and Gershwin is definitely a proponent of this, but when you really look at the songwriting of the day, the songwriters, you know, there were a plethora of mediocre songwriters who could just, they could pump out, you know, easy chords, boring stuff, but with maybe a somewhat catchy melody. But these guys, like Gershwin, Harold Arlen for sure, you know, they were expanding the palette of what pop music was in that time period, and they were really testing the boundaries and pushing what the popular sound is. We take for granted all of the sounds that we hear in our ears, but they were playing with sounds and those bluesy notes. And I looked at the music to Bloomer Girl and some of the other Harold Arlen scores. There's grace notes, there's bluesy notes, there's all these things that a lot of popular songwriters did not have in their tool belt. And I think that sometimes Harold Arlen does not get enough of the praise that he should, because he never had like a big, you know, he had hit songs, but he didn't have like hit
Broadway shows.
Like in Oklahoma, you're like, oh my God, Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg's Finian's Rainbow. I mean, like they didn't write Finian's Rainbow, but Harburg did, but there's nothing like that. You know what I mean? Like
What would be his big, Wizard of Oz.
I mean, Wizard of Oz is the thing that Harold Arlen is probably paid for everything, I would guess.
Oh, no, I would assume so. But I'm wondering, like, what was his big Broadway show? If he had one. He didn't really have one, did he? St. Louis Woman, Bloomer Girl.
St. Louis Woman, maybe?
House of Flowers.
That's what, yeah.
Jamaica, Saratoga, that was about it.
Saratoga is not it. Yeah. Jim, I love all of them. They're all very, but he just, yeah.
Bloomer Girl, yeah, ran for a long time.
He'd gotten stuck in the time period that just, for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. But the scores that he made, if you look at every single show that you just mentioned, Rob, even Jamaica, even Saratoga, there's just some beautiful material in all of those scores. Carol Lawrence was in Saratoga. There's some good, I love the Harold.
I love
they also.
Woman.
They spent a lot of their time. I mean, let's be real. This is a time where a lot of songwriters, if you wanted to make some money, where did you go? You went out to the West Coast. So Bloomer Girl was a big deal because they had been on the West Coast for so long. They came back. this was their first foray back into Broadway, especially the new Broadway, right? Because everybody knew that Oklahoma sort of changed that. That's why we had Annie Get Your Gun. That's why we had, you know, other Kiss Me Kate. The other contemporaries were like, oh, we gotta up that. So I wonder if this is Harold Arlen's sort of version of attempting to, you know, raise the bar. But
it was great. What a great choice. What a great choice. Bloomer Girl's a great choice. So Bloomer Girl, and after you're done listening to Bloomer Girl, go and turn on MAME from 1974. Give it another chance. Give both these shows a second look with open eyes and a fresh heart, or fresh eyes and an open heart, or have open heart surgery. Do whatever you want at this point. Yeah, we're all in quarantine.
Just do it all. Just not elective. Just no elective.
None of this. This was great. I'm so happy. This is good. I can't wait to tune to you next week.
Wonderful weekend. Have a great weekend, everybody. If you know what a weekend is, and watch something fun.
I had a weekend once. A weekend in the country will be staged by Halperin's for the camera. A weekend in the country. Did he turn the camera on?
No.
Next, we've talked about this before, but next week we'll talk about the Liz Taylor drinking game for Little Night Music.
Ooh, I want to do that. I have a DVD of it. I have a DVD of that movie version. So
should I tell you now or wait till next week?
Yeah, just tell me now.
Okay, so this is we might have told this story on this podcast. It's a horrible thing to do.
I want
to
know again.
So they shot, Hal Prince shot a Little Night Music, and everyone dispersed. He rapped, and then he was like, oh shit, I fucked a lot of things up. I need reshoots. Now, when you reshoot a scene, more often than not, you reshoot the entire scene. Hal Prince wanted selected, like, close-ups reshot, selected entrances reshot. So he called everyone back and said, we got to reshoot some things. And Elizabeth Taylor was like, well, we got a little bit of a problem. She goes, I've put on some weight since we wrapped filming. And it's a noticeable amount. But he didn't understand continuity. So there'll be some scenes where she'll like be on camera and she's 20 pounds lighter. And then she'll walk through the bedroom door and all of a sudden she's 20 pounds heavier. And then she'll walk into the bathroom and come out 20 pounds lighter. Like, so the game is you're supposed to take a shot every time you notice a weight fluctuation.
I like it. All right, good.
It's actually how I live my life, which is every time I get on the scale and the weight fluctuates, I take a shot. I'll be an AA. AA just, and Jenny
just,
Craig.
We are just in a phase. We shall get out of it.
I literally, today is the first day I'm wearing pants with a button and I want to cry. So I'm going to.
Because, Rob, you have a performance tonight.
Please, I'll tell you all about it next week.
Okay,
all right.
Okay.
To quote Harold Arlen, I'm going to go push the button back
Bye,
inside.
Everybody.
It's a Jamaica joke.
Well
kids
done.
Kids love Jamaica jokes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Two ladies. Bye. All right. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.